Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I want to cover, in a nutshell, the topic of post-viral fatigue. This episode is inspired just by a few cases I've been working on recently with clients who had a virus and they either experienced a relapse in some of their symptoms. I'm sure there'll be people listening to this podcast who've had a similar experience, or they've been well and then they've had a virus and then they've started to develop this post-viral fatigue syndrome, whatever that might be. And you could put long COVID, I guess, in this category as well, although this is not an episode which is specializing in long COVID. I'm going to keep it a little bit more general. And the reason for keeping it more general is the way that we work with our clients in practice is so unique to the individual. We have no two clients who are the same. Whether a client has got long COVID, a post-viral fatigue, they've got mold, they've got trauma, they've got other things going on, every single one is different. So when people ask, what do you do for long COVID? We don't have a long COVID cheat sheet. We look at the individual and we look at what's going on for that person specifically. And then we work at optimizing their body according to their needs, irrespective of the label that they have. But of course, it's helpful to categorize things, to have a sort of sense of structure. So that's really what this episode is about today. It's talking a little bit about what to do if you had a viral infection and you never recovered, whether you were well and then you had an infection and you've never felt the same since, or whether you've been unwell and you've had a viral infection and now you've relapsed for whatever reason. That's who I'm talking to today. And there might be parts of this episode that will be interesting to listen to, even if that's not your experience. So I would encourage you not to just skip through, maybe if you don't feel like the episode directly applies to you, because you might find it interesting, because we'll be talking a little bit about supporting inflammation and oxidative stress and gut health and things like that as well. As always, I like to ask you to leave a review. I'm kind of bored of hearing the sound of my own voice asking you to leave a review. So let's just leave it at that for today. If you'd like to leave a review, I would really appreciate it. Take a moment now to pause the episode, give me 5 stars, and then come back and listen. And let's just dive straight into the show. I've already given you the preamble of what I'm going to be talking about. And when we're talking about these infections, I've had a few clients recently that, like, this is what we're working on. You know, they had this single event that changed everything for them. And the way that I've been explaining this to clients is when we have an acute illness, so if we get the flu, for example, you'll know how it feels to have an acute illness. You get a fever, you maybe get some brain fog, you have a lot of fatigue, you maybe have muscle aches and pains, you might feel very weak and very tired, you might have headaches. There's a whole bunch of different symptoms that we might experience when we have an acute infection. And often we think of those symptoms that we're experiencing as being the symptoms of the infection. But really what we're experiencing is a change in physiology as the immune system mobilizes itself to deal with the infection. So that sick feeling that you feel when you have an acute infection is your immune system. Your immune system is making you feel that way, as it, very simply and not scientifically put, creates a raging inflammation to deal with the infection because it's trying to save your life. So we create this massive inflammation so we can, like, get rid of whatever's there with your best interests at heart. Your immune system is doing its best to protect you. And then in an ideal world, this acute raging inflammation would last 48 to 72 hours. And maybe that's what some people have experienced in the past. You know, you feel like the worst of the worst for like 2 days, 3 days. And then things start to get better. And usually by about 7 days, the worst is over. You're starting to feel better again. But for some people who find themselves in this post-viral fatigue category, after that 7 days, they just don't get back on their feet. And they continue to experience these, in air quotes, flu-like symptoms of pain, of fatigue, of brain fog. There may be other symptoms that go hand in hand with that as well. But there's a loss of capacity. There's a loss of physical function. And so I'm oversimplifying here just for the purposes of understanding. But what we're basically seeing is if that all those flu-like symptoms were being created by the immune system, as the immune system did its job to overcome the infection, if those symptoms are still lingering, but maybe not to the extent that they were when they were at their greatest, what we know is that the immune system is still active. And while I'm talking about the immune system, what I'm really talking about, if we're putting it in more simple terms, is I'm talking about inflammation. There's an ongoing low-grade inflammation. And by low grade, what I mean is it's not as high as what it was when you were in the worst of the acute illness, but it's at a lower level, it's low grade, it's chronic, it's lingering. And what we're looking to do when we're looking to restore balance and health and well-being to the body is we're helping the immune system to create some sense of resolution. Because for whatever reason, the immune system wasn't fully able to complete what it needed to complete and then switch off. And I really love the overlap here between the immune system and the nervous system. Because when we're looking at the nervous system, and when I'm talking about the nervous system in my Nurturing Resilience group program, is we talk about these incomplete defensive responses, how the nervous system gets mobilized and activated to defend and protect, or, you know, in interest of your own survival. And then the defensive response should happen and it should complete, and then the body should return to a sense of safety and regulation. And if that doesn't happen, we get a lot of this nervous system energy, which is stuck in the body. And that's what we talk about when we talk about being stuck in a sympathetic fight or flight response, or stuck in a freeze where there's so much mobilized energy that the body is almost like got locked in and shut down because of the overwhelm of all of that energy. So just like the nervous system needs to move through a cycle, complete, discharge, resettle, we also need the immune system to work through a specific cycle to complete and settle. So when I did my training in psychoneuroimmunology, which I'm not going to talk about all the mechanisms in this podcast because it will just be so confusing and too much science and too much overwhelming for people who probably have enough on their plate already. But one of the kind of key concepts I remember from my training is this idea that the moment the immune system turns on, it is also preparing itself to turn off. So a successful immune response is to have this really big immune inflammatory response. And then within 7 days' time, that should be done and dusted, and all the processes should be happening where the anti-inflammatory arm of the immune system comes in to calm everything down and turn things off. And in the cases of these lingering and ongoing post-viral fatigue situations, that hasn't happened. We haven't had the immune system, the anti-inflammatory arm of the immune system, come along and turn everything off and calm everything down and regulate everything again and take it back to normal. So when we're working with an individual who's experiencing some sort of post-viral fatigue, we kind of have to think, well, why hasn't this happened? And what do we do now to help it happen so that we can rebalance the body, and then there's less energy being taken up by the immune system and there's more energy available for healthy living and for thriving? I guess also to say here is, you know, sometimes before people have been unwell, say before they had a viral infection and they haven't been the same since, many people will say, oh, but I was absolutely healthy. Not everyone, but some people may say, oh, I was absolutely healthy. But at least with the clients that I'm working with, I can't speak for everyone. When we dig into what was really going on, there was always probably other stuff going on. Things like blood sugar imbalances, a diet that wasn't great, but the person probably didn't realize that their diet wasn't great because they thought that they felt fine. There may have been some sort of toxic load happening. They could have been living in mold and not really known about it and were still kind of feeling okay. It hadn't been fully impacted yet. They may have just been living in chronic flight or flight, but it was just so normal for them that they hadn't really realized how much they had pushed themselves for so long. Or athletes who had been overtraining, so they thought they were fit and healthy because they perhaps had tremendous physical capacity, but didn't realize that they were actually overdoing it all the time and their body was in a state of constant inflammation and oxidative stress that hadn't caught up with them yet. Or people who diet, or athletes who diet for their sport, who may be not getting enough essential fatty acids, which we'll talk about today, which are really important for managing inflammation. So not having the right balance of fatty acids in their diet to support inflammatory processes in the body. Or maybe digestive issues, which had just been normalized, a little bit of bloating, a little bit of irregular bowel movements, but nothing too disruptive. And very often what people will do is just think that's kind of normal and sort of sweep it under the rug. And so people often think that they're healthy because that there's nothing wrong with them. They're still able to live their lives and do their day-to-day things. But there can be a lot of dis-ease flying below the radar. And very often it's a buildup of these blood sugar imbalances, chronic stress, maybe not getting enough sleep, some low-level nutrient deficiencies, which are just kind of like eating away over time, maybe overtraining, maybe digestive imbalances, maybe toxin exposures that the body is just kind of coping with. And then the viral infection comes along, and because it creates this rage, and I'm just using this term rage as just to kind of communicate the fact that we need to have this really big inflammatory response and huge. If you just heard that was me hitting my step goal, moving my arms around, talking to you. But we have to have this huge inflammatory response, this huge amount of oxidative stress needs to happen so that we can defend ourselves against an infection. And because so much damage can be created while we defend ourselves from the infection, all these other systems, which we're kind of just getting by, can sometimes be the collateral damage. And therefore, they get taken down, taken out, because they were weakened before. And now the viral infection has come along and it's sort of pushed everything over the edge, or it's been the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, which is an analogy that's often used in this chronic illness space. So we have to understand that even if you thought you were healthy before, in perfect health before, it can be really helpful to just have an honest reflection at your life and the things that were going on beforehand. Because I've never met anyone who was eating the perfect diet, who had no gut issues, who had no stress, who was sleeping great and taking care of their health beautifully, who's come to me with this scenario. There's always been these other things going on, and they might have been going on for you as well. So once we kind of acknowledge what was happening, that's always helpful because it gives us clues about where we can begin and what we can do differently. And that will possibly be case specific. So each case will be different in terms of what the priorities are, in terms of what we address. And you've probably heard me talk about this so many times on this podcast previously, but we always want to start with basics. So when a viral infection has come along and it's created this big inflammation, it's also created instability in the system. We've become destabilized by the change in our physiology because we needed to make this big inflammatory response. And the damage that has been created as a consequence of this inflammatory response is destabilizing. So we do want to work on the stabilizing factors that I talk about all the time, but I'm not going to focus on these in detail today. They are learning to restabilize the nervous system. And if you need help with that, you can always join Nurturing Resilience, which is my subscription-based group program. You can join us for just £39 a month and learn some incredible tools for stabilizing your nervous system. We need to stabilize how we're pacing ourselves, so not doing more than the body is physically capable of, because when we overexert, we create more oxidative stress. And part of the problem in the first place was this overload of oxidative stress that came from the immune system trying to fight off the infection. We also want to stabilize blood glucose, which I will talk about a little bit more. And we want to stabilize our sleep and our circadian rhythms, which I'd also like to talk about a little bit more, but just more specifically in the context of the immune system. But those are some of the big ones. Stabilize your sleep, stabilize your nervous system, stabilize your daily routines and pacing, stabilize your blood sugar. We want to move forward from a place of stability. I think what a lot of people struggle with in the beginning after they've had some sort of post-viral infection is also the need to take a step back, especially if you were somebody who wasn't well, you were already working on your health prior to the infection and the infection has caused a relapse. It's really, really tough mentally to accept that now you've gone backwards, but you cannot move forwards until you've reached a place of acceptance. So there's some grieving that needs to happen. It's through the process of grief and letting go that we reach acceptance. I have done another episode on grief, so I'm not going to talk about that part of this process. I'm sort of want to keep this in the physical realms for today, but just to acknowledge that, to name that, to express that, is you really do want to give yourself space to grieve. Whether this is a relapse or not, if your life was perfectly normal and now you've become unwell, then there's a huge amount of grieving that needs to happen there too. But either way, we have to kind of give space for grief and find a place of acceptance before we can move forward. So we want to work on the emotional component, and that's actually ties hand in hand with the nervous system, because if we're in denial and we're not working on the emotional component and there's a lot of emotional suppression, that's going to potentially be destabilizing for the nervous system and not be in our favor as we're working towards better regulation. So there's that emotional component, there's achieving more stability with the nervous system, there's pacing, there's taking that step back, allowing for rest, allowing for slowing down, ultimately giving space for the work that needs to be done. And where I would like to direct the rest of this conversation is actually just talk about the practical physical things that we work on with our clients. Now, as I said already, is every case is different. So this is just a bit of a, what's the word I want? Just a little bit of a menu or like an offering of the way that we think about things with our clients. But every case is different. And I'm obviously making decisions about what we do with each client based on who's in front of us, what their history is, and all the other factors involved. But the first thing, surprise, surprise, is blood glucose regulation. And the reason being is when the body creates this acute immune inflammatory response to deal with the infection, we go into a hypermetabolic state. What that means is we burn through a lot of glucose, we burn through it very quickly, and all the metabolic resources of the body, so to speak, are prioritized towards the immune system. An active immune system burns sugar. An immune system at rest or in a more sort of regulated state will burn fat. So when you have this acute immune response, your body is in glycolysis. It's in sugar burning mode. This is why people can often lose a lot of weight in a very short space of time when they have an infection, an acute infection, is because so much energy is being used by the immune system to fight the infection. Often we can't eat that much as well at the time, which is normal. That we'll start to eat our own muscle tissue to break down the proteins so that we've got protein for glycolysis or gluconeogenesis so that we can then use that sugar as energy. So if now you've been through this acute response where you're using a lot of sugar as fuel and you're not able to return the immune system back to a resting state, there can potentially be some metabolic disruption. And by metabolic disruption, what I'm referring to is a loss of metabolic flexibility, which is ultimately the ability to use fat as a fuel source. And so what happens is the body still wants to keep on using glucose as a fuel source. And really the only way that we can shift that is by starting to work towards a lower carb, higher fat diet, potentially a ketogenic diet. If people can fast, another great way to get metabolic flexibility back is to get people fasting. But fasting isn't always going to be appropriate for everyone. If you're prone to hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, we want to make sure we're not just, you know, taking away all the carbs, taking away all the fuel and getting you fasting. It will make you feel terrible. We've got a whole other episode you can listen to on hypoglycemia. But we do, first of all, want to get glucose stable. And then if appropriate for the individual, work on reducing carbs, increasing fats, and then moving towards intermittent fasting. What this does is it takes away the fuel of the active immune system. As I said already, is the immune system, when it's active, uses glucose. An immune system in its regulated state uses fats. So if we don't have any glucose for the immune system, then it no longer has the fuel that it needs to continue to be activated and continue to produce the symptoms, those low-grade chronic inflammatory symptoms of brain fog, fatigue, muscle pains, you know, your unique flavor of inflammatory symptoms. So the first thing, well, not necessarily always the very first thing, but often it actually is the first thing we do with clients is we work on blood glucose. This can be a tricky one for a lot of people. A lot of people have emotional attachments to their diet and what works and doesn't work for them. But we really do need to work on optimizing blood glucose, working towards a ketogenic diet. And another reason for this is because ketogenic diets tend to be high in fat. And fatty acids are going to be really important for immune regulation. So here we overlap a little bit with biorhythms. Basically, in the day, we gain weight. At night, we lose weight. So when whatever we're eating during the day is getting stored in our fat cells. And then at nighttime, when we're not eating, the fuel that's stored in our fat cells and a little bit that's maybe stored in our liver is used at night for the immune system. So at nighttime, the immune system is more active. In the daytime, the immune system is less active. And probably most people will know, like, how sometimes if you have a cold or something, you feel like really rough at night when you're trying to sleep. But then when you're up and about in the day, you might feel a little bit brighter or whatever. So the immune system at night, more active, in the day, less active, but obviously in chronic illness, more active all the time, more so than we would like. But what we're wanting to do is kind of restore that rhythm of the immune system, and that goes hand in hand with our biorhythm. So we're eating food during the day, and then that food at night, when it's stored in our cells, is being released, liberated, and then used for various jobs in the body, one of which is for the immune system. So if we're eating a whole bunch of sugar and we're eating a whole bunch of processed foods and we don't have a good balance of essential fatty acids in our diet, like omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, what fuel are we giving to our immune system And what signals are we giving to our immune system? Are we giving pro-inflammatory signals or are we giving anti-inflammatory signals? So this means if we're moving towards a ketogenic diet, we want to not just go eat a whole bunch of processed and saturated fats, but we really want to, what I encourage my clients to do, is lean towards more of a Mediterranean-style ketogenic diet. So we're eating oily fish, we're eating olives, we're eating nuts and seeds, we're eating avocados, and we're eating foods that are going to have a good amount of fatty acids, because particularly the omega-3 fatty acids are anti-inflammatory. They're going to help to turn the immune system off. So we eat our fatty acids during the day, if you have like fish or you're supplementing with a fish oil. And then at nighttime, when you break down your fat tissue, those essential fatty acids are then sending signals to the immune system. They're sending anti-inflammatory signals to the body. And that's one of the ways we can support the body switching off. But now just think of it like all the cells in your body are made of fatty acids. All the fat tissue in your body has got different types of fats and different toxins stored in it. And so if for all of your life you didn't eat any oily fish, you had a lot of saturated fats, you ate quite toxic food, you're exposed to a lot of toxins, it's going to take some amount of time for us to start to turn over the types of fatty acids in the body and also to support the detoxification of anything else that we've picked up on along the way in our life. And that's why it's not a quick fix. It's in fact quite a slow process at times, because based on what you've done in the past, we have to undo a lot of all of that work before we can start to see a little bit of progress. But what we're wanting to do is really create a shift in having a lot of good fats in the diet as a whole. So we've got blood sugar regulation. We've got working towards a ketogenic diet, potentially intermittent fasting if appropriate for the individual, and making sure that whatever food we're eating, however that's coming in, that we're getting a really good balance of healthy fatty acids like the Mediterranean fats, which I mentioned. The only thing I would say is that some of our clients do more comprehensive testing when it comes to fatty acids. So we can test the balance of like how much omega-3 they have in their red cells, how much omega-6 they have in their red cells. And very often you might hear like omega-3 is anti-inflammatory, omega-6 is pro-inflammatory. We need to have the right balance between the two. But sometimes when we're working with very health conscious people who already are taking their fish oils and eating their salmon and oily fish, they actually don't have enough omega-6, particularly omega-6s like GLA, which we get from evening primrose oil. So this is where it can be helpful to sometimes do a fatty acid panel just to make sure you're not overshooting the omega-3s and undershooting the omega-6s, because even omega-6s like GLA can have anti-inflammatory properties. And especially for women, it can help with premenstrual symptoms. It can help with breast tenderness, things like that. So always one worth considering. And at the moment, I kind of do this little raspberry mousse. I think I've spoken about it actually previously on one of the other episodes, which is kind of like a little fatty acid cocktail, but it's basically frozen raspberries, which I blend with a balance oil, which is from Body Bio. I can put all the links with the episodes, but it's basically a good balance of linoleic acid and alpha linolenic acid, which are your omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And then I put GLA from evening primrose oil, and then I put phosphatidylcholine, all it mixed in with some frozen raspberries and a little bit of coconut oil. And I blend it all together and just make like a little 100 ml pot. So it's not particularly high in sugar because the actual fruit content is probably only about 50 grams of raspberries. And I have one of those a day, which I call a raspberry fat bomb. So I'll put some links in with the podcast, but that's a really nice way that I have that every single day. And I mix some collagen powder in as well, just to get a little bit more protein. And that's a nice way to get your collagen in if that's something that you're interested in doing, but also top up on all your essential fatty acids. And I do have a discount code for Body Bio as well, where you can get 15% off your first purchase if that's something that you want to do. But bottom line is really trying to get a good balance of fatty acids in the diet. So the next piece of that fatty acid discussion is restoring biorhythms. And so this is coming back to the stabilizing factors, where one of the things we're often talking about clients with is you need to have a good evening routine and a good morning routine, where you're going to bed at the same time each day, you're waking up at the same time each day, you're getting morning light on your eyes within the first 30 minutes to 60 minutes of waking. And if that's not possible because you wake up before the sun, you're using a bright light to stimulate your biorhythm. Now, one of the reasons why this is really important is because you're restoring your biorhythm restores the pulse at which these fatty acids are released from storage. So, as I said already, is that at nighttime, you're breaking things down. In the daytime, when you're eating, you're fueling, you're storing things. And so if we don't have an appropriate biorhythm, our body doesn't know when to store and when to break things down. So we need good sleep for so many reasons, but it's not just about getting enough sleep. It's about getting sleep in a rhythm, and a rhythm that mimics the light and dark cycles of the days, because this is informative to how we break down the fatty acids that we've been like loading and charging ourselves up with, and then how the breakdown of these fat cells and the fatty acids they contain then impact the anti-inflammatory response of the immune system. So working on biorhythm is super important. You know, there's lots of different things we also recommend. You can do cold showers first thing in the morning. Does depend on capacity and tolerance. You can do a little bit of movement first thing in the morning. That can help to just get a little bit of a cortisol awakening response. But we do want to make sure that we've got a good rhythm happening day in, day out, because that's having an impact on the immune system. Then moving on to the fourth thing. So number one was blood glucose. Number two was looking at the fatty acids in your diet, but also just the quality of your diet as a whole, I would add there. The third thing is restoring your biorhythms. The fourth thing is looking at digestive health. And so I would also put here just a digestive health and detox. You know, very often when people have had these infections, which have sort of thrown them, there's been something else going on before that. And it could be digestive imbalances. It could be mold, yeast, toxic overload from mycotoxins or other toxins like mercury, for example, or environmental toxins. But there's been something else happening. And as practitioners, we usually start in the gut. I recorded an episode previously just talking about the top two tests that we do with clients, and it's usually one of those is a stool test. And so here, because about 80% of our immune system is located in and around the gut tissue, when our digestive system is out of balance, that has potential to impact our immune system's ability to regulate itself. So when we've got these chronic, ongoing, low-grade inflammatory symptoms from an immune system that wasn't able to fully complete and turn off, we want to think about how do we support the regulation of this immune system. We've talked about that in different ways in terms of looking at blood sugar balance and fatty acids in the diet and restoring biorhythm. And then we want to think about how do we restore digestive health. And when we're running these tests with clients, we're seeing all sorts of things, different combinations of things for different people. But usually it's things like an overgrowth of bacteria. Sometimes there's pathogenic bacteria. Sometimes there's poor production of what we call short chain fatty acids, which are postbiotics. So these are acids that your body makes itself when the bacteria in your gut consume fiber. but some people aren't eating enough of the right fibers, they don't have enough of the right bacteria, or there's too much dysbiotic bacteria. And this is then impacting the short-chain fatty acid production. These short-chain fatty acids are really important for immune regulation. So if that's not happening, and there's maldigestion, you can't digest your fats properly because there's an issue with your gallbladder, you're not necessarily going to be getting those essential fatty acids into the cells of the body. So we've got maldigestion, we've got infections, we've got bacterial overgrowth, not enough of the good guys, not enough of the production of the short-chain fatty acids. Then the immune system is just like, it's really just got no ground to stand on in terms of its ability to regulate. So we want to get in the nitty-gritty and start to work out what we need to do to optimize gut function. And in doing that, we can support the ability of the immune system to regulate and reduce inflammation in the body. We also need to consider if there's anything else going on. You know, why can't the body heal? What's wearing it down? And it could be things like mold, it could be other toxins. So we might need to have an anti-mold plan in there, or we might need to have some sort of support for detoxification, where we're looking at using binders, we're looking at sauna to sweep toxins out, we're looking at where toxins may still be, where someone may still be exposed to toxins in their environment, which I think is something I've spoken about early on the podcast in the past. So ultimately, we're asking the question in it, which is, what is stopping this body from healing? And there, this is where we look at the case history. We maybe run some extra tests. We dig deeper and we work out what we need to do in that regard. And so then the final thing, thing number five, which I want to talk about, is just generally we want to support oxidative stress and inflammation. Doing all the things one through four, we're doing that anyway. But here I thought it would be helpful just to talk a little bit more about oxidative stress and inflammation and what specifically we do with our clients. So from an oxidative stress perspective, a big part of managing oxidative stress is actually pacing. So when we overdo, the body goes into, it needs to continue to produce energy to fuel whatever we're overdoing, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional. But now the mitochondria are a little bit damaged and we're trying to produce energy in an inefficient way. And even though we're producing energy, we're also producing more free radicals as we produce energy. And this is increasing oxidative stress. So managing oxidative stress, or part of managing oxidative stress, is proper pacing, which is why I think pacing is so important. But additionally, we want to consider how we support the body's natural antioxidant processes. We have three enzymes in the body which help to manage oxidative stress. They are catalase, superoxide dismutase, and glutathione. Catalase, we need iron to make catalase. Superoxide dismutase, we need zinc and manganese. And then glutathione, we need certain amino acids and selenium. So very often in what we do in our practice is we just give people liposome or glutathione as a supplement. And that's kind of like the go-to. But then we can also just think about like a diet which is colorful in terms of having a lot of natural antioxidant nutrients in there, natural antioxidant phytonutrients. So colorful fruit and veg, if you're having fruit, or more colorful veg on your plate, getting all your plants in, provided they're tolerated by your gut. And then pacing, supplementing with something like glutathione, super important. And then managing inflammation. So again, we can manage the inflammatory load of the body by thinking about how we eat, eating foods that don't generate inflammation. So we want to eat whole, unprocessed foods. We tend towards more of like a paleo diet. So meat, fish, eggs, lots of colorful vegetables, fruits if tolerated, nuts and seeds. That's basically making up your diet. But then I guess in some cases, you know, people might eat some grains or whatnot, but then this is where we might avoid things like dairy or grains, sugars for sure, processed foods, burnt or blackened, or, you know, overcooked foods, charred foods, processed seed oils, things like that, which would naturally be a lot more damaging in terms of how it upsets that inflammatory balance in the body. But then additionally, we can also think about supplementation. So my favorites when it comes to supplementation would be curcumin. There's a product called Curcumin Megazorb, I think, by NutriAdvanced. And I love that. I just have a big pot of it at home. And then whenever I feel like I've done a little bit too much, I just take some of those. Or if I have a meal, you know, you're having a treat meal and you're having something which may be a little bit more pro-inflammatory, just have a couple of those with the meals to kind of offset the inflammatory balance. But then another product I really like is Designs for Health. Is a company. They do something called Inflammatone, which it has in proteolytic enzymes in it, or systemic enzymes in it, which can help to sort of break down and degrade proteins in the body. So if there's kind of like any fragments of the immune response that still need to be like cleared from the body, it can help to digest that. But then it also has some things in there like curcumin and resveratrol and some of those anti-inflammatory nutrients. So those are kind of like my top, I guess, top three anti-inflammatory oxidative stress support supplements: a liposomal glutathione, some sort of curcumin, or maybe some sort of systemic enzymes. And to be honest, if we just recap on everything that I've mentioned here, once you've worked on your blood glucose and you've fully optimized that, once you've worked on the fatty acid balance in your diet and you've fully optimized that, once you've worked on your sleep and your biorhythms and that's fully optimized, and you've done some sort of gut health and you've done some sort of detox protocol and you've supported oxidative stress, that's 6 months worth of work right there. That's what we would possibly do with someone in our 6 month package. But it takes time. It takes time to work through all of this and to make the changes in a way that's not overwhelming, and also to give the body time to just do its own healing. You know, we don't want to overload with like loads of change, loads of supplements, and then the body's got no space to work out what's going on. So that kind of brings me to the end of this episode today. If you have been someone who's been impacted by a viral infection, and I probably should have said at the beginning, this could also be something like a vaccine injury. With the vaccine injury, we might also want to consider all of these factors as well. And there may be others too, especially, you know, and there may be different things that we might also include here depending on the case. But if you are someone who's been impacted by an acute viral infection or some sort of vaccine injury, have a reflection and have a think about everything I've spoken about today. And I think sometimes people do these things to a degree, but they're not fully optimized. And full optimization is sometimes that what can make the difference. In addition to the two things I haven't gone into in depth, which is proper pacing and proper nervous system support, because sometimes people are kind of going through the motions with nervous system support, but not in a way that's actually making an impact on the system. That's what the Nurturing Resilience subscription is designed to help you to do, is to really understand your system and how to work with it and how to get results on that nervous system side of things. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. I hope it has given you some things to think about, which will help you on your journey. And I look forward to chatting to you soon again in the next episode.